And welcome to The Point of Pittsburgh. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you today. Thanks so very much for joining us. Thanks going out to the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO as well as the PSEA for sponsoring this program. I'd like to say thank you as well to Rosemary Trump for coming in studio and joining us here today on The Point of Pittsburgh.
And it's a pleasure to be here. I'm just sorry that my sidekick, the author of The Point of Pittsburgh book, is not with me today, Charlie McAllister. But he is here in spirit and in print.
That's right. He is here in spirit because he has a letter to the editor that we're going to talk about here today.
Exactly. And I really want to commend Charlie for submitting a letter to the editor to talk about the wonderful life that a local activist, both in terms of the military and politically and academically and in labor relations, and was once a union worker, started out as an iron worker after the Vietnam War. And we talked a little bit about him last week, T.J. McGarvey, but because to the credit, and that's really the point of my message today, is to talk about the point of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and giving a shout-out to them for permitting their reporters like Courtney Linder and Andrew Goldstein to report about the wonderful lives of workers, worker heroes, workers who took pride in, you know, doing their job well on behalf of their employer and making a contribution to their community in many ways, and not being, you know, famous because they were an entertainer like David Cassidy or Della Reese, who it's wonderful to celebrate their lives also.
Certainly.
But you don't have to be rich and famous here in Pittsburgh in order to get an article about, you know, the worth of your life.
It's some recognition
exactly.
for what you've done.
And I don't care who you are. Every person in this world wants to be validated. And while, you know, you can be validated with a short obituary, it is nice to see from time to time a newspaper validating the lives of blue-collar workers, of workers who've spent their lives just trying to make it their contribution in their job to making life a little better for the rest of us. And they've done this in this last week by publishing Charlie McAllister's letter to the editor to T.J. McGarvey, who was a teacher, a labor negotiator, a union activist, an employer representative later in life, as well as to a gentleman by the name of Thomas LeBlanc, who was a public school teacher and later became a Carrie Furness tour guide on a volunteer basis and worked with Rivers of Steel, one of our important partners that the Battle of Homestead Foundation works with is Rivers of Steel. And the fact that he was willing to devote a large segment of his retirement hours to be a volunteer to share the wonderful history of our region. And also, he, early in his life, before getting his teaching degree, was a steel worker. He would be able to have knowledge to draw from about his work as a steel worker and his father's work. It was a generational thing. His father, Thomas LeBlanc's father worked as a steel worker, so they had that direct experience to be able to share what life was like with tourists who would want to come and find out about what happened here, what kind of steel, what did they produce, how did they produce it, what under what conditions, was it a dangerous job, did they make decent money? He could answer those questions. And then the last person that the Post-Gazette celebrated was a grocery clerk at the Giant Eagle, a unionized Giant Eagle at Squirrel Hill,
I know that one well.
Right, and I'm sure many of our listeners know it well. Harry Fink, and he died at a young age, only age 56, and it shared, you know, the opening paragraph by Courtney Linder basically says that Harry Fink was dedicated and had worked at Giant Eagle as a union employee since he was 16 years old. And she went on to share that he, you know, went on and did some college work and was avid in ecological activities and volunteered with bicycle trips and so forth.
So he gave back to his community as well?
Exactly. And but what really struck me was that at the end of the article, she concluded that her brother said that Harry talking to his brother, I wonder if I would have done more with my life or if I could have done more with my life. And the brother said, and he thought about it a second or two, and he said, you know what? Nah, I'm just a blue-collar guy, and I'm good at it. And I think that's phenomenal.
Absolutely.
To be able to say.
That's right.
It's enough. You know, if you can be a good grocery clerk and take your job seriously and help the customers as they come in and, you know, do your job well and efficiently and help make a profit for your employer, Giant Eagle, as well as make a decent union wage and benefits and give back to your community on your spare time volunteering in the community. That's enough, and I'm good at it. I mean, I love that.
Well, and it's so I guess the point being, too, that not only recognizing his good work and his contribution to the community, as well as the teacher as well, giving in his retirement, that not only is it important to recognize these, but also kudos to the Post-Gazette for doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is rare. You wouldn't find too many of these stories in the New York Times or the Washington Post. You know, you'd have to be rich and famous or a politician or something where your name was always out there or be given a Pulitzer Prize or a Nobel Prize in order to have your life celebrated and authenticated and appreciated. But the fact that they're willing to spend print time to affirm that, you know, our community, which has basically always traditionally been a blue-collar community, that's how we've, you know, between the steel and the mines of the and industry and the manufacturing base that we've had, that, you know, the largest segment of the population has worked in blue-collar type jobs, that's okay. And I think that's phenomenal.
It's worthwhile and valuable.
Exactly, and it is. It is. I mean, after all, I mean, you know, for those who have traditionally followed the Christian path, they basically, according to script, is following a carpenter. So that's not so bad. I mean, really. So the fact is kudos to the Post-Gazette and their work in doing this. And I wanted to share Charlie's letter to the editor since he was not able to be with us today, but he is here today in print, and so everybody can open up their Post-Gazette when they get home tonight after work and read all about T.J. McGarvey and the wonderful work he did around also the Vietnam Veterans Memorial that we are able to have the privilege to appreciate here very near the Heinz football field.
That's right. Right next to the river there.
Right.
On Allegheny. Yeah. Well, very good. Well, we should take a quick break here. But when we come back, we'll have more for you with Rosemary Trump here in studio with The Point of Pittsburgh. This is Nathan Ruggles.
We've had a great relationship, exalted a giddy Donald Trump following his two-day schmooze fest in Manila with the thuggish Philippine president, Rodrigo Duterte. Duterte, who calls himself a toughie, brags that he's personally killed many people and likes to compare himself to Satan. He's been on a murderous rampage since his election last year. In the name of eliminating the drug trade, he's unleashed a massive military assault across the country, not merely targeting dealers, but also people using drugs. His onslaught is a human rights atrocity, with untold thousands essentially being executed in what are antiseptically termed extrajudicial killings. i.e. illegal, unjustified, murderous. Yet, the present president of the United States says Duterte is his new buddy, and Trump stressed in their official discussions that the Philippine president can count on him and the U.S., which includes you and me, to be a friend. And as a friend, Trump didn't bother his authoritarian buddy with any unpleasant talk about those rampant human rights abuses. Instead, the Duterte-Trump get-together was one of mutual praise and even affection. Indeed, Donald was delighted when Rodrigo impulsively grabbed the microphone at a gala state dinner and serenaded Trump with a love ballad, crooning, "You are the love I've been waiting for." In fact, Duterte had earlier demonstrated that love when he named Jose Antonio to be his trade representative to our country. Antonio, a Philippine real estate mogul, happens to be a partner with our president in the luxurious new Trump Tower, now under construction in Manila. Cozy, huh? This is Jim Hightower saying, hugging up the Manila Satan might be good business for Trump, but it's a sorry deal for our national interest, and it's an insult to our people's support of human rights.
Somos la Unión Internacional de los Panaderos, Confiteros y Trabajadores de Tabaco y los Molineros de Grano luchando por los trabajos americanos. Nabisco, fabricante de marcas icónicas como el Oreo, Ritz Crackers y Chips Ahoy, ha ganado la fortuna en América y su respuesta patriótica ha sido enviar los trabajos americanos a México. Como resultado, los consumidores en los Estados Unidos siguen boicoteando los productos hechos en México. Ingresos corporativos han bajado en todo Norteamericana, los consumidores están enviando un mensaje muy fuerte y claro. Ahora los líderes religiosos de todas las religiones a través de los Estados Unidos están pidiendo una investigación del modelo de negocio de Nabisco y han programado un tour de 6 ciudades para investigar el asunto de manera más profunda. En el mismo momento en que las negociaciones de NAFTA están en la mente de todos, la comunidad religiosa comenzará a hablar de los trabajadores, los políticos y otros líderes religiosos con la intención de discutir el exilio de trabajos por Nabisco desde una perspectiva moral y ética y publicarán ampliamente sus hallazgos. El BCTGM y su socio Justicia Obrera Interconfesional piden a toda la gente de fe y conciencia social que se unan a esta lucha contra la explotación por Nabisco de trabajadores en los Estados Unidos y México. Millones ya están boicoteando los productos de Nabisco hechos en México y ya está afectando sus ganancias de la empresa. Únase a nuestra lucha por la justicia moral y económica. Únase a nosotros en www.fightforamericanjobs.com. www.fightforamericanjobs.com.
And welcome back. We're in the midst of the Point of Pittsburgh here. This is Nathan Ruggles. Thanks so much for being with us here today. I'd like to recognize the AFGE as well as the IBEW Local 5 for the support for the program. Also, as a quick note, we're on social media. You can reach out to us through the Union Edge Facebook page as well as Twitter. So Rosemary Trump's here with us here in the studio. Rosemary, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And thanks for you being here each and every week, bringing us all these great stories of Pittsburgh. Right before the break, we were talking about the Post-Gazette stories of workers being recognized in the news. And we have another example of the efforts of people here in the city to make the community a better place.
To remember our labor heritage and our activism. Pittsburgh's a union town. It's a union city. It's where we have a proud tradition of it. Several major international unions were founded in Pittsburgh, and we have a storied history of people standing up for what's right and speaking out and marching for what they believe in, and sometimes even sitting down.
Standing up and sitting down, right. Depending on the case, right?
And exactly, and that's what I appreciated about yesterday's Post-Gazette report, was reporting on these wonderful mothers and children who and in the spring of 1951, decided that they were going to take direct action to make sure that the children could and walkers could safely traverse the new bridge that was just had been completed and getting prepared to open up. And that bridge was the Rankin Bridge, sometimes known as the Braddock Bridge, the Whitaker Bridge, the Kennywood Bridge. Anyway, it traverses the Monongahela River at the intersection of Braddock and Rankin and goes over to Whitaker and Homestead, West Homestead, and Duquesne and McKeesport on the other side of the river. And what was occurring is that there was a new $8 million bridge named for one George Rankin Jr., and it was going to be named the Rankin Bridge and opened up on April 30th of 1951 when, lo and behold, a number of women and children set up chairs and protested and said, "You're not opening this bridge until there are sidewalks so that our kids can safely walk and or bike across this bridge." And one of the women by the name of Mrs. George Cutnell said, "Hey, I've got three kids. They're ages 12, 10, and 5. All of us have lived in dirt and mud and eaten the dust from the construction of this bridge, and it's not opening until there are sidewalks." And they got action. I mean, it showed that action will produce results. If you're passionate about something and you think that injustice is happening, that there's nothing wrong with organizing a group of your neighbors.
Absolutely not. You should.
Together, exactly, to say, "Hey, what about us?" I mean,
right.
This is just not for cars and trucks. It's for all of us and that we all don't have cars and trucks. I mean, in those days, of course, most people, if they had a car at all, it was one car. They could only afford one car in the early 1950s, late 40s, right after the war. And they said, if you're not going to give us sidewalks, this bridge isn't opening. And so there was an emergency meeting, and the head engineer met with them, and it worked out that, okay, we'll delay the opening of the bridge for 10 days while we construct sidewalks. And they won. The moral of the story is that the women and children who gathered and protested and said, health and safety is just as important as commerce going back and forth. It really created the opportunity. And of course, as every other bridge was built in the area, they didn't make that mistake twice. All the other bridges that came afterwards were accommodated with sidewalks, so that to this day, pedestrians and all those young people who love to do bike riding are able to access, from side to side on the rivers as a result of these women in the early 50s sitting down and saying, "No sidewalk, no traffic."
That's fantastic. I mean, and not only just on the face of it, that those types of efforts that people have taken should be recognized generally, but the fact that they've put out the story from the past as an example, a shining example to people today who may feel they may see something going wrong in their community and they don't feel they can do anything about it, or they've never seen an example of how they themselves could make a difference. That seeing is how this group of women and children in the 50s can make a difference, maybe they could too.
Exactly.
Right? And when we desperately need to hear more about such examples so that we ourselves can feel that there is hope for our generation and hope today that we can also make a difference in our own communities. And also too, and it's not, and it doesn't have to be saving the world, right?
Right.
It's just putting sidewalks on a bridge. It's doing something tangible and something concrete in, no pun intended, in your community to make a real difference. And it doesn't take a whole lot necessarily to make that happen. It just is a matter of, like you were saying, getting organized
and working together
to make it happen, whatever it may be. So so that's great. Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention.
I think that you're right, Nathan, that the message is, you know, solidarity is the American way. That, yes, we do have individuals that can accomplish great things, but usually it usually takes working together in order to make it happen. And I don't get, you know, even, you know, yes, it's, isn't it wonderful that we have an Apple phone? But imagine if you didn't have all those workers creating all those parts and fitting all those parts together into one nice, beautiful little case. It takes both.
That's right. You can have your Steve Jobs, maybe the person who we think of when we think of the Apple phone, but it's everyone that stood with him and behind him and that worked together to make it happen. You know, we celebrate the Martin Luther Kings, but it's the entire civil rights movement together that really accomplished great things in the 1960s, right?
And in the previous program, our last program, the labor-intensive program, we were talking about, you know, the possible, well, in my view, the injustice currently perhaps taking place today in the halls of Congress of taking away health care benefits from the elderly and from the poor who will be losing health care, access to health care coverage as a result of this tax giveaway.
2 million people or more.
That we can do something about it. And the way we can do something about it immediately is both by protest, you know, in front of their offices and saying that's wrong and they should repeal it, or if they do, pass it. Or, but ultimately, we can act together in solidarity. A form of a protest is voting, and that's really the important message, because unfortunately, in this country, there's only about 50% of us who actually are registered to vote. And then of those 50% who are registered to vote, another 50% take the time to vote, other than in a presidential election. In the presidential election, usually you get up to maybe 80 or 85 or 90% of the people registered to vote that actually take the time to vote. But if we care about an issue, there is a way to resolve it in a democratic society, reasonably and peacefully, but if it takes social protest, and if it takes action, we can do it. And
that's right.
Is the message here.
And I think, too, you had mentioned the tax thing. I mean, there is, you know, there are people taking action tomorrow right here in Pittsburgh on the issue of those taxes. I know that there is a rally tomorrow going to be taking place here in Pittsburgh about protesting these tax cuts. So there are examples of people doing just that right here in Pittsburgh.
It's a long tradition in Pittsburgh. It's the American way. It's the Pittsburgh way. Get out there and carry your sign and wear your union T-shirt and act in solidarity. And you can change the world.
That's absolutely true. Do we just have just a little bit of time left? A final thought for us, Rosemary, on this or any other issues that might be coming up?
Well, the only other thought I had about this article was also talked about that was in 1951. And for those of us who live in the area, we know that for 3 or 4 years, the Rankin Bridge was reconstructed, and it's beautiful now. It's now, it was done all union, and it's, you know, it's a fabulous bridge. It's very convenient. However, you know, and while it was built with sidewalks, the fact is that we have to remember that when politicians talk about tax cuts, it means infrastructure
will go. And that's where it goes.
And that's it. We need taxes to not only build things, but to maintain them and to recreate them.
Absolutely. And that'll have to do it. So that's it for the Point of Pittsburgh here. With Rosemary Trump here in studio, this is Nathan Ruggles. Thanks so much for listening.